Good morning. Welcome to What's Up Boone County. I appreciate you joining us this first weekend in April. It's good to be saying that. I'm happy that spring is coming. It's here, at least theoretically it's here. You know, we've had a pretty good winter as winters go, and lately it's been a little wet and cool, but I'm hoping that we'll have a good run in an early spring. But I hope you're doing well. Our guest this week's been a longtime friend of mine and somebody who I've admired as a teacher. John Goodwin has retired in 2019 as a social studies teacher. He taught history and government and economics at Lebanon for 41 years. And over that time, he affected the quality of education and affected the lives of literally hundreds, if not thousands, of students who took his seminar class and topics and some of these other topics, the courses that he taught. Was very well respected, and the entire community was sorry to see John go. He was in school right before I was, and I remember him as a football player, and then, of course, watched him over the years, and my kids had him in class. But I thought it'd be good to get John in to talk about his teaching career, a little bit about his family background. We'll get his thoughts on some of these hot-button issues of the day. We hear all this talk on the Internet or on the TV about critical race theory and curriculum, control by parents, too much control being exerted by certain people or not enough by others, censoring of books that some people find objectionable. Of course, there's been a significant increase in homeschooling in our country, and we've seen it here in Boone County. There's many more kids homeschooled today than there ever used to be, for reasons we'll talk a little bit about. And we'll get his thoughts on public education in general. So, John, thanks for being our guest this week on What's Up Boone County.
Well, thank you, Kent. It's a pleasure being here. I'm looking forward to our conversation. I think we'll have a good discussion.
Well, let's talk about your family, because I knew your parents. Your father was a lawyer.
My dad was a lawyer.
And your mom was an English teacher or history. I don't remember. I had her.
Well, she started with history. She started later. She waited until my brother Richard graduated. She was a substitute teacher up until then. But after my brother graduated, she went full-time.
Full-time. So I had her as a substitute then, because your brother, as I call him, Dick, He was a year younger than me, so your mom wouldn't have been a full-time teacher.
Well, one of those years in there, somebody was out for some kind of an extended leave, and I don't remember, and she taught that one.
That may have been it. How's your brother doing? I haven't seen him in a long time.
Well, he passed.
Really, Dick?
Yep. This past year, he passed about a year and a half ago, heart attack.
Oh, that's too bad. Well, he and I played high school basketball together. I was on his team. I didn't play much, but he was pretty good.
You guys won a sectional.
Yeah, I'll never forget that sectional. We did not have a very good team that year on record, but we beat Brebeuf, and we beat Pike, and we beat the undefeated Thorntown team in the sectional. That one of those last years that Thorntown actually had a school.
I actually used you guys as an argument. I coached girls basketball for probably 12 years or so. And when we won our first sectional, I went into the athletic department and said I wanted a picture. And the athletic department said, we'll give you a little picture down the hall here. And I went, no, you won't. You're going to give me a big picture.
Just like that 68 team up there on the wall.
That's exactly right.
Well, that's
you
good.
Had a losing record, but you got a big picture. And so we're going to get a big picture,
yeah.
and we ultimately did.
I don't know if that picture's still around.
It is.
Is it really?
Yep.
I haven't seen it lately. I don't look very good in that picture. I don't want to look at it too much. So you taught where before you came to Lebanon?
I taught straight economics at Noblesville. When I first got out of college, I had no idea of what I wanted to do. I think I was kind of destined to either be a lawyer or a teacher. So I managed a branch of a finance company, Old Beneficial Finance, in Newcastle. I lived in Zionsville and commuted to Newcastle. Did that for a year and a half or 2 years before I finally decided I needed to make a decision. And I obviously then made the decision to go to education. Never regretted it.
Well, you did a great job teaching our kids and our community's kids. And you went to college where? Where'd you go to college?
I went to IU.
That's what I thought. You were in Indiana, weren't you?
I was.
All right. So you taught economics and government and history, and then you did your topics class as a seminar, your senior for seniors and the advanced students. Did you like working with those kids?
I did. Everybody thinks that teaching the advanced kids is easy. When I first started teaching, I had lower-level kids, or I had freshmen, and, you know, that requires a different kind of challenge. And everybody thought when I moved, or just in general, that if you're teaching the upper-level kids, that's pretty easy. But it's not, because they're upper-level kids, and they have higher expectations of you, and you've got to kind of be on your game to keep their attention, to do to make it interesting for them. And I like that. It made it interesting for me to go in teach those upper-level kids.
Well, and you've got some experiences that you could use to teach them and help them understand some of the issues of the day. You tried to do that, didn't you?
Absolutely. I started every class with anybody have anything, because social studies is social studies. And so anything that is taking place is really relevant to a social studies class. And so I used current affairs to kind of be the tip of the sword, if you will, or the spear, for whatever class that I was teaching. And I thought it worked very well. It made me stay in tune with what was taking place in the world, and I tried to make them be aware of what was taking place in the world.
Well, so you had to stay abreast of what was going on and read the articles, whether it be in the newspaper or the magazines, or, of course, we didn't have the internet then like we do now. You know, one of the things I talk about to people occasionally, we used to have what was called the fairness doctrine, where TV news was supposedly fair. They had to give you a little more of a balanced presentation of the debate or the issues. We got rid of that for reasons I don't remember several years ago. It's been a while now. And now you have Fox News on the right, and you have MSNBC on the left, and nobody even tries to make it fair. They may claim they are, but it's just political point of view. And people tend to watch the network that they tend to agree with, and they oftentimes don't ever see or hear the other side. It's a real problem, I think.
I think it is, too. That was starting to become pertinent in the last few years. One of the things that I would tell my kids is watch CNN or one of the liberal stations for a while and then switch over. I still do that.
Yeah.
With this Ukraine thing, I'll watch a little bit on Fox to see how they present their news. And then I'll switch over to see if there is a difference, and there obviously is a difference. But then it's my job, and it's the job of the kids, and it's the job of American citizens to try to, at that point, find the difference. But you got to make an effort to branch outside of your view to understand the other side.
And that would be difficult, I would think, because everybody's got views, whether it's on what their view on abortion is, or on the economy, or on labor relations, or Ukraine, or you name the issue of the debate day, and they come and go and change over time. But you know, everybody forms opinions, and yet your goal, I assume, as a teacher, was to make sure people, students, understood both sides of the debate and could make an informed decision, and whichever way they would go, as long as they had a basis for it, you'd probably were comfortable with that.
Exactly right. I was the devil's advocate on whoever spoke, whether it was a kid that leaned to the left or whether it was a kid that leaned to the right, whoever spoke, I was going to disagree with them, and I was going to throw out some kind of an argument.
Because they hadn't thought of that.
They had not thought of that. I wanted them to just kind of nod their head. They could still think the way they wanted to, but I at least wanted them to think that the person on the other side had legitimate reasons to feel the way that they did, and they weren't Nazis on one side or they weren't communists on the other side, that they had a legitimate view. And we are losing that as a society, the ability to kind of listen to a debate and understand what the other side is saying.
Well, one of the problems we have is that so many people don't want to get into teaching, or they're getting out early, or they don't even want to start. What are we going to do about that? How do we get people interested in teaching and making it a real career, one they can be proud of and have it as a profession rather than a job?
It's going to require a major change in thought by school boards across the country. We've kind of stepped on the teaching profession and education in a lot of different ways. We've stepped on teachers. We don't pay teachers. That's part of it. If you got a kid in college, And they're weighing their options, and part of what they're looking at is the salary. And you see education down at the bottom of their salary choices. You're not going to get some of these highly talented kids to go in the direction of education. It's got to be a calling. We do have to change our perspective a little bit on education. And I don't have the full answers on it, but education is in some trouble.
Well, it is for sure. What about the parents? How have you sensed the change in attitude of parents, if there's been a change over your 41 years in education? How would you characterize what you run into toward the end of your career as opposed to early on?
I'm asked frequently about how kids have changed since I taught 42 years altogether that one year at Noblesville. And my answer really has been that kids, the core of kids, hasn't changed very much. If a statement was made in class that was had a double meaning, they'll giggle. Even today's kids will giggle just like they did 30 or 40 years ago. What's changed the most is our society and parents in particular in regards to their kids. You mentioned prior to us going on the air that if you got in trouble at school, you got in trouble at home. That's not the way it is anymore. Parents are advocating so strongly for their kids that their kids can really do no wrong. I had kids in my class that were not high ability kids, but they were in a high ability class. Good for them for taking the challenge to do that. But if they got a C, mom and dad would come in because my kid is not a C student. Well, he is. He or she is. Parents have changed significantly from when I started teaching.
Do you think you got as much support from the administration in the later years as you had in earlier years?
No, not entirely. Administration has changed. School boards have changed. And part of that is the change in society. We in education really are one of the first, if not the only, to officially label somebody a failure. And schools don't want to do that. And so part of what is taking place is that we have lowered standards. We want graduation rates to be high. And so a kid who isn't doing anything gets a second chance or a third chance or a fourth chance, as many chances as they possibly can to make sure that he or she graduates. We also have lowered the standards in that we create another diploma. Call it a participation award if you want to. But a different diploma where this kid is a graduate of Lebanon High School or Western Boone High School or wherever they go from. And so when there is a kid who is acting up, I have to tell you up front here that I didn't have a lot of those. But when I talk to other teachers and I hear them talking about kids that are acting up and the next day they're back in class, and that frustrates them very much.
I can imagine. And you know, before we go off the next topic, I forgot to ask you about your current family. I know you're married and you've got a daughter. That's it, just one daughter?
Had a son, died of cancer.
Well, that's right. Your son was in my daughter's class.
Yeah.
So how's your daughter doing? I know she went to Hanover, didn't she?
Yep, she went to Hanover. She's doing fine. She played golf, had a very nice career here at Lebanon playing golf, was a top-level student, went to Hanover, played golf for them, had a very good college
career. What's she doing now?
Career. Well, she's working for D.R. Horton down in Cincinnati.
Big home builder.
She's moving back and forth between sales and marketing. She wants to do a little bit more of the marketing part of it, but she's doing well.
And is Sherry working or is she staying home now?
No, she's working. She just took over. It's just us. That Mindy Spaulding, the building that Mindy Spaulding bought right across from the Central Christian Church.
Yes.
There's a salon in there. There is a boutique above it. And then Sherry just took over in December the bakery that is in the back part of that. So she's been baking. She's very, very good at it. For those of you listening,
stop in and try those donuts or pastries.
Yep, or put in an order for a cookie or a cupcake.
Good. Well, I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad your daughter's doing well. I'm sorry I forgot your son, Casey, and glad Sherry's doing well. Well, we're going to come back and continue our conversation with John Goodwin about some of the hot button issues of the day and get his take on some of them after we take a moment to hear from our sponsors. We're back with What's Up Boone County this first weekend in April, talking with John Goodwin, a retired teacher at Lebanon High School after 41 years here and 1 year in Noblesville. Taught the topics class in later years, history, government, economics. Very popular teacher, very well respected. Kids liked to take his course, even though it was harder than most of them they would have in school. So let's talk about some of the current controversies of the day in the field of public education. Well, there's a lot of people out there that are unhappy with our public schools. And I'm not going to try to argue that there aren't some problems in the public schools, but a lot of these people are creating problems for the public schools. That's my take on it. What do you think?
They absolutely are. I think this is a little bit predictable that this would take place. I don't know, many years ago, watched a video in which the principal at that point was showing Mitch Daniels prior to his being governor. And it was a warning that the principal was trying to get across to us. And one of the questions asked of Mitch Daniels was, is public education capable of reforming itself? And Mitch Daniels laughed and said no. And I happen to be one that kind of agrees with that. And so I think public education is in some trouble, and it does need a reform. I always thought that reform had to be forced from some kind of a outside force. I didn't actually think it would be parents. I thought it would be the business community that would do it. But education does need to make some changes.
What do you think about the philosophy of many of the people that parents should have more say or control or input into the curriculum and what goes on in the classroom teaching environment?
I do not think that parents should be involved in the development of a curriculum. When I was coaching girls basketball, I would have a meeting with my parents, and I would say to the parents that this system might work for your daughter, and this system might work better, a different system might work for your daughter, and a different system might work for this kid. Somebody has to figure out what's best for the team, and that's me. And the same thing I think is true with curriculum. There are professionals that know how to develop the curriculum, so I think parents ought to really stay out of that in the development of curriculum.
How about the censoring of books? That's always been a topic. I mean, I can remember when I was in school, that sort of thing occasionally went on, but it seems to be more and more prevalent, especially in the rural areas, in the southern areas. The Republicans seem to be at the moment more agitated about the content of books than the Democrats, but that could go the other way over time. What do you think about the censoring of books and topics of school?
Absolutely opposed to it. You're right. The Republicans are the ones that are leading the way for the most part. The farther right Republicans are the ones. The moderate rights would agree that I think that books should not be censored. You go farther right, they think they should. We went through that at one point at Lebanon, in which one of our teachers was teaching a book about the Vietnam War, a firsthand account about the Vietnam War. And the author of that book used all the words that a man in combat would be using. And there was a group that wanted to ban it. And we had this big meeting at the school board, several social studies teachers and English teachers and myself argued against that. Modern education, the leaders of modern education kind of lean left a little bit. And so there are books out there that do fulfill a little bit of the left agenda. But they're books, and they ought to be read, and the parents ought to be correcting, from their viewpoint, ought to be correcting what that message of that book is at home if they want to do it.
Well, the parents, unfortunately, they don't communicate with their kids, or they may not have any idea about some of these things, or they work different shifts, or they don't have the kind of communication that you and I grew up with.
No, they do not. I don't know if we're going to get into it today, but one of the things that I think is important to take a look at is the value of education. We plant kids down in front of TVs or in front of computer screens at very, very early ages. These kids know technology much better than you or I do, and the technology has served as babysitters for a good portion of these kids that are alive now. And parents do not sit down and communicate in the same way that we did.
What do you think about this debate about what's called critical race theory, which a lot of people may not be actually familiar with as a concept, because you don't hear it discussed in schools around here. But I guess it's a view that somehow we are being critical of our past. They don't want to hear about the slave ships or the slaves that our forefathers had under their control, or the Nazi Germany. I mean, you get into the debates about what history should be taught and what history should just be ignored. And that may not be a fair characterization of everything that's involved in the CRT debate, but where do you come down on some of that?
I think CRT, to start with, is being overblown a little bit by the media. I do think that there are systems in some of the more liberal areas of our country that do have a CRT agenda. I don't think it is prevalent throughout most of the school systems. I do think there are probably individuals, even with our own system, that is doing that. And this is a hard question, Kent. Is if you go back and look at Thomas Jefferson, for example, he owned slaves. That should be something that these kids know about. But he also wrote the Declaration of Independence. He is the one who put the language in place that is driving many of our debates. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. Okay, how do you balance those two things? The fact that this man owned slaves, or the fact that this man wrote this very, very, very powerful sentence that still drives us today. Part of the critical race theory is they want to concentrate just simply on the fact that he owned slaves and not bring in the balance of what the man did as a whole. Both ought to be presented. The fact that this man did write the Declaration of Independence, that the Founding Fathers did write the Constitution, but many of them did own slaves. That ought to be both. They were people.
A lot of these efforts to remove the statues of the Southern leaders and Confederate leaders, I think is wrong-headed. People need to know about the South. They need to know about what the Confederates thought and why they wanted to be separate, or why they felt like they were being abused by the Northerners. It's part of our history. If people don't know that, they're more likely to repeat it, aren't we?
Absolutely. Following the Battle of Gettysburg, a Southern prisoner of war was asked why he was fighting. They asked him about slavery, and he said he didn't own slaves. He was just a farmer in the South. And somebody said, well, why are you fighting? And his answer was, because you're down here. One of the things that is lost a little bit is, and it's, you again, this is the balance, is the question of state rights when it comes to the question of the Civil War. Many of those people in the South that were fighting were not fighting for slavery. They were fighting for the state of Virginia. They were fighting for the state of South Carolina. That's gotten pushed aside a little bit. When I was first in school, that was the argument about state rights. As far as slavery, again, this is one of those questions of making sure that history is showing both sides of that argument. And I agree that if you're looking at a statue of Robert E. Lee, both ought to be known. I mean, You cannot argue that the South fought valiantly. They may have been fighting for the wrong reason, but my gosh, it is the defining moment in our history, and it needs to be explored.
Well, the problem is, you know, people have become so politicized. The media is either right or left. It's hard to find a balanced presentation. You know, we used to have two political parties in the country. Now we have at least four, and probably more. You know, you got the far right, you got the moderate right, you got the traditional Democrats on the left, and then you got the far left. People can't agree on anything. Congress is dysfunctional. All they seem to want to do is get reelected and make speeches, make themselves look good. You know, this interrogation of this lady who's currently up for the Supreme Court is an embarrassment, as far as I'm concerned.
I agree.
And, you know, I'm not saying the Democrats didn't do the same thing to Brett Kavanaugh in a different light or for different reasons, but it's just not working very well. Hopefully we can get this thing pulled around. So how are your views about public education in general? We got about a half a minute to go. Are you optimistic or are you pessimistic about it?
Well, I'm ultimately optimistic about almost everything. And the reason being is that I'm optimistic about the American way of doing things. We just had a conversation about this with some teachers last night, or a couple of nights ago. I trust the Constitution. I trust the things that we do. We don't do it at the speed that most people want to do it at. But I trust how we do things. And so ultimately, I'm optimistic. I am somewhat pessimistic in the short term. I think we still have some bruises to come. I still think we have some significant road bumps to go through. But I ultimately think that we will get through it. We have gotten through World War I. We have gotten through World War II. We got through the Depression. We got through the Vietnam War. We've come through a lot of things, and it's because of the, to me, it's because of the American system of doing things. And so I ultimately have confidence that we'll figure this thing out.
Well, I hope you're right, John, and I share your opinions on this. I share your optimism. I very much enjoyed talking to you today, and I'm going to have you back at some point because there'll be other issues we can talk about. But I thank you for coming in and being our guest this week on What's Up Boone County.
Ken, I enjoyed it. I'd like to come back again. I think we left some things on the table.
We got a lot more to talk about, and we'll figure out that list and do it again. So our guest has been John Goodwin, and I enjoyed my time with him today. I hope you have a great weekend. Next week we got the Masters. So if you're a golfer, you'll be able to watch the Masters next weekend. So that's the official start of spring as far as I'm concerned. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week on What's Up Boone County.